Reno, Nevada is being rocked by a strange series of mini earthquakes. These tremors began 2 months ago, and scientists are still puzzled about the number to begin with, 500 last week alone, and their pattern. Usually there's one big quake followed by ever-diminishing aftershocks. In this case, hundreds of just noticeable earthquakes. Then, last Friday, a larger one followed 11 seconds later by one at magnitude 4.7. That's the strongest in the Reno area for half a century. Then another pretty big one a few minutes after that. Well, we want to especially hear from our listeners in Reno. What's it like living through this series of quakes? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also tell us your story on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And if scientists are scratching their heads, well, try explaining this all to a high school science class. Richard Brong's high school science class has been monitoring the quakes for the past month. Today he joins us from the vice principal's office at Galena High School, where he's also the chair of the science department. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be with you.
And I'm sure you're in the vice principal's office just to get a nice phone line. Most of us who are just students don't have happy memories of the vice principal's office.
That's exactly right. We have to walk to get a good phone sometimes.
Now, this news story has captured a lot of attention. When did it start to grab the attention of your science students?
Well, this is the kind of thing that I like to monitor in class. I mean, bringing in real data brings science to the kids, and that's one of the nice things about it. It was probably about mid-March or so when I started bringing it up to the attention of the students that, hey, there's something unusual going on.
And had they noticed?
Well, if you live on top of the faults in northwest Reno, some of the quakes were definitely detectable if you were there. But since there were small quakes in the magnitude high twos, low threes, as far as the ones that you would be able to feel, as soon as you get a few miles away from the epicenters, you really didn't notice unless you were, you know, really sitting still and paying attention to it.
I understand, though, if you're lying in bed at night awake, you can sometimes feel them or think you feel them.
That is correct. That is correct. And there's a lot of neat tools that we can tap into in the science classroom, especially. So if we think we feel something, we can go actually look at the seismic network in real time to figure out, hey, what's going on out there, and did we just experience an earthquake?
And have you ever experienced an earthquake in class?
Not that we've actually felt in class. There have been numerous quakes that have come across the network during class, but yet they haven't been ones that we've actually felt. I keep the monitor going in the back of the class when it's not up on the big screen, so that when something does come up, we can look at it, we can see it right then and there, and if necessary, stop what we're doing and shift directions and go look at the quake and see what took place.
And I understand the epicenters are in a place called Mogul, a little town just outside of Reno?
That's correct, yes.
And how far away from that is Galena High School?
As the crow flies, we're probably about 10, maybe a little over that, 10 miles to the south.
So these are very localized tremors.
They have been very localized all along one particular fault. The line east to west is, I don't think, more than maybe a mile or two wide. And then north to south, oh, I'm guessing, I don't have the actual data in front of me, but probably about 10 miles or so north to south. So they're definitely quite localized.
We have some callers from Reno already. By the way, if you're calling from Reno to tell us about your experience with these earthquakes, 800-989-8255. This is Lisa. Lisa with us from Reno.
Yes, hi. I was calling to let you know I got shaken out of bed on Friday night when the 1140 earthquake hurt. It was 4.7. And the aftershocks have just been very nerve-wracking. You know, because they're just, you never know when they're going to happen, and the whole house starts shaking and things start falling off the walls, and you never know when it's going to happen anymore. It's constant.
I'm told people in Reno start telling jokes about moving to California to get away from the earthquakes.
Well, I moved out here from California, from the Bay Area. I lived through the 89 earthquake, which was much more significant, but it's still quite nerve-wracking.
I bet it is. Lisa, good luck. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know to stand in a doorway, right?
That's right.
And I wonder, some of the advice you're giving to your students, Richard Brong, must be practical advice. If something happens, stand in a doorway.
Well, definitely. Some of those things, standing in the doorway and so forth, I mean, some of those come from, I don't want to call them urban legends, but, you know, things that we've seen in the past. Doorways typically seem to be up after a quake, but there are a lot of common sense kind of things people can do as well. And it's, you know, you teach it, and when Mother Nature is kind enough to oblige you with some real-world demonstrations, all of a sudden the students are really paying attention, and that's one of the nice things about what's going on right now. we've got something to tie it into directly, and wow, they're experiencing it. It's pretty neat.
But as a science teacher, you'd like to think that you could pose this conundrum, what's going on here, and scientists would have the answer.
Well, exactly. The amount of data, though, that is available is boggling almost as far as what you can get. But we also get to then talk about the scientific process. Why don't we have an answer right now for what's going on? What do you think is going on? Let's look at what we do know. And then you try to start separating out the speculation from the true science and being objective about what we're learning about. And, you know, kids start seeing patterns come out. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that makes a lot of them into future scientists, which is nice.
Let's get Mitch on the line. Mitch is calling us from Reno. Is that right?
Yes.
Go ahead, please.
I'm actually a geologist here in Reno. I work for an engineering and environmental firm here, and we've been enjoying watching the quakes go on and are watching it on USGS's website. But the funny thing is, my wife works at another firm here in town, and the rumors running around town are just getting to the point of silliness.
Like?
There's people talking about a 9.0 quake coming at a specific time and place and other such nonsense like that, things that can't be predicted, and people are just overreacting, over-sensationalizing it.
And that's the silliest story you've heard, that there's a 9.0 just waiting to happen?
That's one of them, yeah. And then there's people panicking and buying all sorts of supplies needlessly. I mean, it's good to be prepared for anything that could go on, but there's people hoarding and all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah, but that toilet paper doesn't go bad.
That's true. But it's been interesting living here and watching it go on and seeing these things go on.
Well, as a geologist, I'm from what I've read, seismologists are saying, huh, got me? We've never seen anything like this.
Well, that's exactly it. Geology has never been an exact science, and this is an even less exact thing. Normally, it starts out with one big one and shakes down, or starts out, or is just a series of small ones. This has gone up to a point and seems to be coming back down now, but who knows? We could get another good one here any moment.
Mitch, thanks very much for the call, and good luck to you in that big 9-0.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. I wonder, Richard Brung, rumor control, is that part of your job in high school, too?
Oh, is it ever? And Mitch brings up a great point. I mean, you would be surprised, you know, if you think general public brings up a lot of rumors. You know, the kids come in with some of the wildest things. You know, I've heard that there's going to be a volcano blowing up in northwest Reno. I've heard that California will be sliced off next week at 5 o'clock on Wednesday. I'm exaggerating there, but all sorts of things like that. The rumor mill starts going and people talk. You know, people are seeking answers, and especially for adolescents, they're really looking to plug into something they can relate with, and they like communicating with each other, sometimes whether it's factual or not. And, yeah, that's part of the fun of it is trying to show them, you know, this is what we do know, and this is how we can show you that some of these rumors are not true.
Let's get Pam on the line, and Pam's with us from Incline Village in Nevada. And Pam, is Incline Village more inclined than it used to be?
No, I wouldn't say that. But I just moved here last summer from New York City, and I don't think I realized that I was living on a fault.
Well, of course, there are many faults in New York City, but none of them are geological.
Well, I actually went through, about 25 years ago, a little earthquake in New York, and I was living in a brownstone on the ground floor, and I thought it was the boiler underneath. I nearly ran out into the street. But the other night, on Friday night, I was kind of sleeping on the sofa in front of TV with my two cats, who were rescues from Katrina from New Orleans. And I was sound asleep, and one of them just suddenly went berserk and woke me up kind of hissing and hitting on me. And I thought that I must have, like, rolled over on her or something. And I jumped up to try to calm her down, and within about 15 seconds, my condo just started rocking. And I was like, oh, my God, it's an earthquake.
And then you remember all those stories about the dogs in China which bark just before the earthquake.
Yeah, it's like I'm going to stick with my little cat Fanny from now on because she's my personal early warning system.
And probably good in case a hurricane approaches, too.
Oh, anytime it's windy, these two poor cats go so berserk. They just get really scared.
Pam, thanks very much, and good luck to you and your cats.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Richard Brung, those stories about animals anticipating earthquakes, boy, they are legion.
You know, that is. You know, that's funny, because that's one of the things that has not come in by the word of mouth of my students. Oh, my cat, my parakeet, whatever it might be. They just haven't been talking about that as much. So that's one thing we haven't really discussed much since this swarm has been going on. There's... You know, I've heard a lot of the callers and a lot of people talking about these swarms saying, I didn't realize we had faults here. It's amazing when you look at some of the data. We're literally littered and crisscrossed with faults, a lot of them recent and some of them potentially quite dangerous for us. And it's one of those things that, for the most part, public's not too aware of it. We're getting there.
But since none of them are the San Andreas fault, nobody pays all that much attention usually.
Well, yes and no. I mean, we are Nevada's number three in the country for earthquake activity behind California and then Alaska. And some people are surprised to learn that, but we definitely have the capability of strong high 6, low 7 magnitude earthquakes here in the Reno area. And a lot of people aren't aware of that.
We're talking with Richard Brong, who teaches earth science and chemistry in grades 9 through 12 at Galena High School in Reno, Nevada, and is having, well, a real world experience to tell his earth science students about, a swarm of minor earthquakes, some getting up to the pretty noticeable range that have hit Reno in the past few weeks. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's talk with Josh, and Josh is with us from Reno.
Hi, you guys.
Go ahead, please.
I don't know Mitch, and I know he's a geologist, but I'm almost sure he doesn't live in the Northwest Reno where I live. And I have a 4-year-old, and we've spent probably about $600 in repairs on our home. And it's to the point where I can sit with a video camera and just wait till they happen again.
And how far are they apart?
Well, I have to say it's better. I think even looking at the website that they're talking about, even yesterday it was maybe a dozen. But through last week, you could wait 5 minutes, and from 1.3 up, you can feel them violently shaking of the house. It only lasts a couple seconds, but just the thought of, you know, living day to day and having to think in that frame of mind of trying to be prepared for something that, you know, no professional around here can tell us what's next. And, you know, he's laughing about it. But it's when you have a 4-year-old and, you know, furniture, tall shelving, tchotchkes and pictures on walls, that's pretty intense.
What have you spent the money to repair?
A water heater, a toilet, and some picture frames. But mostly my water heater, I didn't want to, try to do it myself. So I
think that was probably wise. I wonder if you can upload that video to our website. We'd love to see it.
Yeah, actually, it came out pretty good. I mean, it's an earthquake. When your house shakes, I equate it to fingernails on a chalkboard on a very large scale.
I'm sure everybody would want to hear that.
Yeah, I grew up on the East Coast, and there, one good one that I remember, and it was real rolly and kind of flowy. And these are really intense and violent and fast.
Okay, well, I'll direct you to our website. That's npr.org/talk. And go there, and if you can upload the video, we'd love to see it.
Thanks, you guys.
Okay, bye-bye. And let's see if we can go now to Kaylin. Kaylin's with us from Reno.
Hello, Neil. I wanted to tell the story of brushing my teeth right before the earthquake hit, and I wish my dogs would have been the early warning system because... you know, growing up in Ohio until recently, we haven't had many earthquakes back there. And so it hit, and my fiancé said, stand in the doorway. And we stood in the doorway, and it kept going. And so we ran outside and then realized the dogs were inside. So we ran back inside, and it was still shaking, grabbed the dogs, went back outside again. And so it was significant for about 15 seconds.
And pretty scary then.
Extremely scary. We have a bunch of new cracks in the plaster. Some things fell off the walls. So, and we were a good, 6 miles from the epicenter of the big
wow.
one that we've had.
Well, hang in there, Kaylin.
Thanks very much, Neil.
Okay, bye-bye. Well, let's talk now with Frank. Frank's also with us from Reno.
Hello, Neil.
Go ahead, Frank.
I wanted to, in our case, our house is about 10 miles from the epicenter, and what's been happening is our bookcases, we have large built-in bookcases in the living room, and they're slowly walking their way away from the wall, which was the main effect on the house, other than the fans and light fixtures swinging. And so now when I walk through the living room, I give the bookcases a wide berth until this weekend when we can fix them, you know, rebolt them to the studs. But the same kind of thing when you're in a building and you're standing under something, you know, a shelf or something, and you look up, you see the shelf, you sort of edge away from it because you don't know when they're going to hit. Or on the highway, when a truck goes by and the highway shakes and you see an overpass coming up that you're about to go under, you wonder, is that an earthquake or is that just a truck? Should I drive under that overpass? Because you remember those pictures from California.
Nimitz Freeway, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. So just the sense of apprehension, you know that there's this series and you don't know when the next one's going to hit, and start looking around for hazards. So it increases the stress level, I think, for all of us.
Okay, Frank, hang in there. Thanks very much for the call.
Sure.
And let's see if we can squeeze in Kim. Kim, also with us from Reno.
Hi, Neil. How are you today? I live about 300 yards from the epicenter of what Berkeley is calling a 4.98. And one of the things that people aren't talking about is what the Bureau of Mines and the School of Mines up at the university are calling subterranean rumbles. And that's a pretty much constant low-pitched noise, like a freight train in the distance. Sometimes it precedes an earthquake. Sometimes it doesn't. Historically, that preceded the 1914-1915 earthquakes, which were 6.0 in the Verdi area, which is just to our west. And so it's very, very frazzling on the nerves.
I can imagine it's a little disconcerting. Can you hear this rumbling?
Yeah, you hear it all the time. And if you put your hands on a vehicle or a fence, a metal fence that has footings down in the ground, you can actually feel the vibration. It's almost like a vibration. And this is a historical thing, too.
Richard Brong, it sounds like you might want to take your class for a field trip.
You know, that doesn't sound like a bad idea.
Kim, thanks very much. Good luck to you. And Richard Brong, good luck to you, too. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having us.
Richard Brong teaches science. He's also the science department chair at Galena High School in Reno. Joined us from the vice principal's office there. When he's not in the classroom, he listens to us on member station KUNR. Tomorrow, it's Science Friday. Ira Flatow will be here. We'll be back on Monday. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.